From Spark and Anvil and Math Circle. This is Circle and Echo in Chapter 1 of the Math Circle cast. The snow had been falling for almost an hour, and at the round wooden table near the bay window of the math circle's old library room, two friends were trying very hard to feed seven yetis. The problem in front of them was simple enough to state and impossible enough to solve cleanly that it had occupied them, in companionable silence, for the better part of 15 minutes. A drawing of a lopsided nonagon, nine-sided, vaguely cake-shaped, sat on the table between them. Above it, in Circe Circe's careful, unhurried handwriting, the conditions. Seven yetis, one cake. If any yeti receives even a crumb more than another, a yodeling contest will commence, and an avalanche will follow. Circe was the kind of mathematician who liked to begin by understanding what she was looking at. She had drawn the nonagon herself, very carefully, on a fresh sheet of paper. She had a private theory that messy diagrams produced messy thinking, and that one of the small disciplines a person could cultivate, if she wanted to think well, was the discipline of redrawing the problem before attempting it. Echo Edie, sitting across from her, was a different kind of mathematician. Edie did not redraw things. Edie listened. She had a habit of leaning slightly forward when the other person was speaking, of humming a small, distracted-sounding hum that meant she was concentrating, and of saying, at intervals that struck most people as both irritating and necessary, "So what you're saying is..." She said it now. "So what you're saying is," Edie murmured, although Circe had not yet said anything, "this is a nonagon, nine sides, for seven yetis, and the yetis are very serious about fairness." "I have not said any of that out loud," Circe pointed out. "I am restating your drawing," Edie said. Circe considered this and decided it was fair. The first thing Circe did, after a moment's quiet, was the natural thing. She drew nine straight lines from the center of the nonagon out to each of the nine corners, like the slices of a pizza, and laid down her pencil with the small satisfaction of a person who has produced a clean idea. "The simplest cut," she said, "from the center out to the corners, nine identical wedges. We give one to each of seven yetis. We have two left." She looked up at Edie, expecting agreement. Two leftover wedges was not, on the face of it, a disaster. It was a partial solution, and partial solutions were the kind of thing she liked. They have structure. They could be repaired. But Edie was already humming. "So what you're saying is," Edie said slowly, "we slice it like a pizza. Nine clone wedges. Each yeti takes one wedge, which solves the easy part. And the hard part, the part we have to come back to, is the two wedges nobody has eaten yet."
"Yes. And the two wedges we have left over each need to be divided into seven exactly equal portions, so that nobody, not the yeti who got their wedge first, not the yeti who only gets a little crumb from the leftover wedges, receives even a crumb more than anyone else." "Yes." Edie looked at the drawing for a long time. "I want to say something about that," she said, "but I want to say it carefully, because I don't want you to think I am dismissing your idea. Your idea is the right place to start. I am restating it, so I am sure I understand what you're proposing before I try to add to it." "I am paying attention," Circe said. "What I want to say is, the moment we start dividing those two leftover wedges into seven equal pieces, the geometry stops being friendly. A wedge is a triangle. Cutting a triangle into seven exactly equal pieces is geometrically possible, but the kind of possible that takes a ruler and a protractor and a lot of trust. That is true. So I'm not sure my objection is that your idea is wrong," Edie said. "My objection is that your idea solves the easy part of the problem and pushes the hard part of the problem one step further down the road, which is a normal thing for an idea to do. It just means we need to ask whether there is a different first move that doesn't push the hard part down the road." Circe was quiet for several seconds. She was not offended. She was, in a way she had been learning to recognize over the past 2 years of these afternoons, grateful. There was a thing Edie did, that Circe's own mind did not naturally do, which was to receive an idea fully, completely, and then ask, "Is this the version of the problem we want to keep solving?" Circe's instinct was to refine an idea until it worked. Edie's instinct was to ask whether the idea had pointed them at the right shape of question. "All right," Circe said. "What if we don't start from the center?" Edie picked up her own pencil, which was a perfectly ordinary, somewhat blunt pencil that had a small bite mark on the eraser end. "So what you're saying is," she began, and Circe smiled, because she had begun to find this small ritual genuinely useful. "We should look at a different first move, something that doesn't leave us with leftover wedges that nobody knows how to share." "Yes. All right." Edie tapped her pencil against the drawing. "We have a nonagon, 9 sides. We have 7 yetis. 9 and 7 are co-prime, which is a polite way of saying they have nothing in common. There's no factor we can pull out to make them play nicely. So instead of starting with a 9, what if we start by giving ourselves a 7? She drew on the same paper a small but firm pair of lines. 2 of the nonagon's 9 vertices were now sliced off. The remaining shape, Circe traced it with her eyes, was in fact a heptagon, 7-sided. 7 was the number of yetis.
"If we trim 2 corners off," Eddie said, "the inner shape is a heptagon, and a heptagon, sliced from its center, gives us 7 equal wedges. 7 yetis, 7 wedges, 1 each. Clean." Circe looked at the new diagram. It was a beautiful idea. Beautiful in the way Edie's ideas often were. Not surgical, but generous. Reshape the problem before you solve it. Circe had once read, in a footnote to a translation of Euler, that the great mathematicians distinguish themselves not by solving the hardest problems, but by selecting the right form of those problems. She was about to say so. Then she saw the 2 trimmed corners, sitting in the corner of the drawing like discarded triangle-shaped offcuts, and she felt a small, familiar dissonance. "Echo," she said quietly, "I want to restate what you just proposed before I add to it, because you've done me the courtesy of restating my ideas, and I want to do the same." "All right." "What you're proposing," Circe said, "is that we change the geometry of the cake itself. We turn it from a nonagon into a heptagon by cutting off 2 of its corners. Inside the heptagon, we make 7 clean wedges, 1 for each yeti, and that solves the hard part of the original problem, the part where 9 wedges can't be divided cleanly among 7 yetis. Yes?" "The thing your idea does not yet solve," Circe said, gently, "is what happens to the 2 corners we trimmed off." Eddie put her pencil down. "Ah! The yetis will know. The yetis can smell wasted cake from a mile away." "They can. So we are now in the same kind of situation as before. Your first move solved the easy part of the problem and pushed a different hard part 1 step down the road. The hard part is now, how do we divide 2 triangle-shaped offcuts equally among 7 yetis? Which is just as hard as dividing 2 wedge-shaped offcuts among 7 yetis. Yes?"
The 2 friends sat with this for a moment, looking at each other across the table with the particular companionable resignation of people who have spent enough afternoons together to know that being stuck is a normal stage of the work and not a moral failure. "All right," Edie said. "I think you're going to tell me that what we actually want is a different kind of move." "I think what we want," Circe said slowly, "is a move that doesn't generate leftovers. A move where the very act of cutting the cake produces exactly the right number of equal pieces, with no offcuts." "What you're saying is, instead of starting from the center, or trimming the outside, we look for a third way." "Yes." Circe stared at the nonagon for a long time. Edie watched her stare. Circe had a way of looking at things that was not quite the same as looking. She was, Edie had decided some months ago, a person whose face went very still when her mind was working hardest, which was disconcerting if you did not know her, and informative if you did. "What if we draw a smaller nonagon inside the big one?" Circe said. "Restate that for me." "What if I take the nonagon," Circe said, "and inside it, concentric with the same 9 vertices radiating out to the same 9 corners, I draw a smaller nonagon. So the cake is now made of 2 pieces, a small central nonagon, and around it a ring made of 9 identical trapezoids." She drew it as she said it. The 9 trapezoids ringed the inner nonagon like the petals of a stiff, geometric flower. Edie hummed. "So what you're saying is, 9 identical pieces around the outside, and 1 small whole nonagon in the middle."
Yes. And we have 7 Yetis. So each Yeti receives 1 trapezoid. That uses 7 of the 9 outer pieces. We are left with 2 outer trapezoids and 1 inner nonagon. Which is still leftovers.
It is. But it is leftovers of a different shape. Edie's eyes narrowed. She leaned forward over the drawing. Say that part again. Cersei smiled. It is leftovers of a different shape. The original leftovers were wedges, triangles converging at a point. The trimmed corner leftovers were triangles at the corners. Both of those shapes are hard to divide into 7 equal pieces. But trapezoids are not hard to divide into equal slices. You cut them into long parallel strips. And the inner nonagon, a small 9-sided shape, is itself a cake we already know how to attack. Or, Cersei paused, a cake we can hand back to ourselves as a smaller version of the same problem. Edie sat back, slowly, and put both hands flat on the table. Circle, she said. Yes. That's a recursive solution. It is. The hard part of the problem is now smaller. It's the same shape as the original problem, but smaller. Yes. We have made the nonagon for 7 Yetis problem into a smaller nonagon for 7 Yetis problem, plus 2 trapezoids that any kid could divide into 7 equal strips with a ruler. And the inner nonagon, we can attack it the same way, again, until the leftover cake is small enough to ignore. Or we just divide it into 7 strips, since by that point it will be small enough that strip cutting works fine. Outside the bay window, the snow had stopped. The afternoon light was low and gold and falling sideways across the wooden table, and the drawing in front of them was a tidy, almost beautiful nest of nested nonagons, ringed with trapezoids, each one indistinguishable from its neighbors. Edie picked up her pencil one more time. So what you're saying is, she said very softly, almost to herself, good listening, yours, mine, is what made this possible. If I had not restated your first idea, you would have spent the afternoon trying to slice triangles into 7 crumb piles. If you had not restated my second idea, I would have spent the afternoon trying to share 2 corner triangles. Each restating slowed us down by maybe 30 seconds, and it saved us, between us, about 2 hours. Circle Cersei looked at the drawing. The 7 Yetis were going to eat. The avalanche was not going to happen. The cake was going to be fair. Good listening, she said. Good echoes, Edie replied.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to Circle and Echo. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.